Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we welcome founder of Rock Against Trafficking, Gary Miller. Rock Against Trafficking is an organization fighting to end child slavery. Joining Gary, we welcome Andy Frazier, bassist for the legendary band Free. Andy is one of the major artists playing on the album that Gary is producing to support Rat. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Flow to the Izzo Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great show for you tonight. It's really an honor to have our guests in. But first, Scott, what have you been up to this week besides dousing yourself with water?
Well, that's what I had to do. I had to do that, get myself wet just like everybody else. And, you know, it's great that you donated, Jeff, and I donated too, but I was just disappointed you didn't.
I know, you just wanted me to do it. But there is a drought. You have to respect that. There's a drought in California.
I don't respect that. It's caused by people up in San Francisco. Yeah. Anyways, I'm sorry. Yes.
That's another show. Anyway.
Yes.
So what have you been up to?
Well, I've been checking out. Actually, I just got something really cool that I'm super excited about. I got the VT-1000 Air Wind Center. What the heck is that? That is a tube tester from Orange. It's like a new tube tester. Like, they don't exist. So I don't know if anyone's seen it, but it's basically, it's a valve tester or tube tester. You can sit there and pop in any tube you want. It'll tell you whether it's good, bad, or used, and then it'll give you a rating so you can match all your tubes for your amps.
Yeah, and it's a lot smaller than the old tube. I remember they were like consoles that we used to go to electronics store.
Super tiny for that, but yeah, it's really, really cool. So I'm really anxious to take a look at that, go through some of my tubes on my amps, and shoot a video on it, and then unfortunately I have to send it back to Orange. But
you released a couple of videos too.
No, just me getting wet.
Just you getting wet? Didn't you do this video of the string change buddy from Steve Hunter?
That was like last week, yeah.
And time flies. I'm sorry.
Yes,
I have no concept of time. There
yes,
is no
I
time.
I did do that, but yeah, it was a while ago.
Anyway, so check out all that
stuff.
Yeah,
and then I was checking out some Wampler pedals that I got, the Faux Tape Echo, which is super, super cool, and then the new Latitude Tremolo. So you guys should check those out too.
That's cool. All right, well, let's go ahead and take a break real quick, and we're going to get right back to our guests because there's a lot to talk about and we don't have a lot of time. So we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound. 1-800-222-4700 or catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Sweetwater is proud to partner with The Flow in bringing you the latest and greatest in all guitar-related things, be it tone, be it artists and musicians, their secrets on their tone, amplification, and live performance. We at Sweetwater are just as passionate as the folks on The Flow in bringing you what we consider to be the best in pro audio equipment and guitar and PA gear. Give us a call and we'll discuss gear whenever you like. The number here is 800-222-4700. And again, you can catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. I'm Aaron Raby, and thanks again for listening.
Hola, amigos. Hello, everyone. My name is Billy Sheehan, and I'm from the Winery Dogs, and you're watching Good Flow Guitar Enthusiasts.
And we are back, and I had to play that little clip in your honor.
Gotta love Billy. But I should mention that Mr. Big is coming out with a new album, actually, in
that's
two
right.
weeks.
They're so back. That'll be coming. That's going to be
I'm excited. I don't know. I love Mr. Big. But.
Well, let's go ahead and introduce our guests. First of all, I want to thank really especially Ilona Europa and Heather Gunn for putting this together for us to get you guys on the show, because it really is an honor to have you guys on here, and I think what you guys are doing is just amazing. But anyway, we have Gary Miller and Andy Fraser, and Gary is the founder and the creator of Rock Against Trafficking, and he's put together this whole thing, and they're putting together an album called Set Them Free, featuring the music of Sting and Police. And Andy, who everybody knows, is the was the bassist for Free, and I know a couple of my friends had called me the day when they found out you were going to be on the show, and we've all played All Right Now. We've played that in our bands when we were growing up in college, you know, high school and college. So anyway, it's a real honor to have him on here, and he sang on the album besides some other amazing, amazing guests. We're going to get into that in a minute, but I want to kind of introduce everybody. Gary, Andy, thank you so much for being on the show. It's really a pleasure to have you guys here.
Great to be here.
Great to be here.
Now, first of all, before we start anything.
Actually, before we even start that, you know the water on the head thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a new one, and it comes out of Gaza because they don't have any water. You get a bucket of rocks, which they have plenty of, and you pour that over your head. So man up.
All right.
Well, see, I don't know if I could do rocks. I mean, I could do it, maybe.
I already have them in my head. I don't need them on my head. I'm fine.
How big are the rocks? I mean, are we talking?
It's debris from the from yeah. the buildings that yes. they've blown up.
Yeah.
So,
you know.
So you need some debris.
I haven't blown anything up recently in my backyard, so. Neighbors complained last time.
Yeah. But anyway, first of all, before I start, we got to talk gear real quick, because Gary's a guitarist. He's been playing for a long time, and of course, your history with both guitar and bass. What do you use? I saw a beautiful Guild in your picture that you sent me, the picture we put up on.
Oh, that's right, yeah. In fact, I swapped that for, I had a Roland keyboard, mm-hmm. and this guy, he was in Miami, and he wanted a keyboard, and he said, I'll give you this guitar for that keyboard. So I said, fine. And I've had it years. It's great, great guitar.
Is that one of your main axes that you use for sessions?
No, not really. I mean, I've got an old Ibanez 335
mm-hmm.
That I've had since I was 17.
Mm-hmm.
But I use different guitars for different, you know, on records, I like to use different guitars for different sounds, you know. Les Pauls and ESP. ESP are endorsing me. So I've been using a lot of ESP recently.
What about acoustic guitars? Because you do a lot of acoustic stuff.
I do. Well, I've got a Fetch. It's an F-I-R-C-H.
Oh, wow.
And nobody's even heard of them. They're handmade from Switzerland, I think, Sweden. And when I was looking for acoustic guitars, I tried every Martin you could possibly think of and every acoustic Taylor, but none of them squared up to that one. And I bought three of them. You can't get them now, but they're amazing acoustic guitars. The best acoustic guitar I've ever played.
That is cool.
And I was in Nashville trying all the different Martins out, and I just couldn't find one. And I tried this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I got it from London, the shop in London.
You know why you couldn't find it? It's because I own the one Martin that does sound
is that right?
What you were looking for.
You won't be saying that if you played this fair. I'm going to bring it in next time.
Yes, for sure. You definitely.
I will do.
I want to hear this now. The Andy. First of all, tell me the picture that we have of you playing bass. I found one of you playing the electric bass. Tell me about that bass, and is that that's the one you use pretty much all the time now?
It's called a Tobias.
Oh, nice.
Which has been bought by Gibson. And for many years, I used Gibson EB3. In fact, I think they sold quite a few. Along with my name, and I really liked it until it was stolen. And this is very similar in the fact that it's got a very long neck, but basically it's a small instrument. It's not like a Fender Precision, and being a small guy, it suits me very well. Luckily, the last time in England, it was with me, because when I got back, my house had been burgled, they'd stolen all the basses, including the Thunderbird acoustic that was just given to me, a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, your regular flat screens and laptops and what have you. And within a couple of weeks, was it Fodera called me up and said, do you want one of our basses? Bill Nash says, I'd like to build you a bass. So I was, okay. So
Did you ask them if they happened to be in your house? That's one way to get someone to endorse your product. I'm just asking.
Just in my house.
But the EB, though, you used, that was what you used with Free, right?
Yeah, the EB3.
That was your sound for that. Gary, let me go back to Gary real quick. I want to go give everybody a little idea of where your backgrounds. I mean, obviously, and there's a lot to talk about with Andy because he's played with some of my favorite players. But Gary, can you tell me a little bit, because you're a guitar player. You've been playing for a long time. And you, besides doing production and stuff, you've done session work. Can you talk a little bit about some of the stuff that you've done?
Yeah, I used to do a lot of session work on guitar and keyboards as well. And I've used to do lots of gigs until I got into production, really. But I toured on the Faith Tour with George Michael. Mm-hmm. I used to be with a guy called Nick Kershaw in England in the late 80s. And so I did about three tours with I did a tour with Elton John and Nick Kershaw. But for me, I got spoiled because the first tour that I did was with George Michael on the Faith Tour. So it was all downhill from then. So I did George Michael, then Nick Kershaw and Elton John. And then I started having to play theatres, and it was all, I thought, I'm travelling on buses after I'd been spoiled, so I didn't really, I thought, I don't think I like this anymore. And I was going to go off, and I got offered a job with a big production company. Mm-hmm. And so it was a decision whether to carry on touring or going to songwriting and production, which I'd always liked. So basically, I just ended up doing production.
Production. Now, I just want to mention, this has nothing to do with guitar necessarily, though you played guitar, but you were one of the first British artists to actually be allowed to compose for a Russian film, feature film.
That's right, I was, yeah. In fact, I think I was the first, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I know that they're pretty nationalist with their music, but I think that's incredible, you know.
I mean, they had been trying to get composers, but they'd fired, the director had not got what they liked, and for me, you know, somebody sent some stuff that they liked.
Yeah, no, I know it's tough because I was reading that this was years ago that Samuel Barber, the composer, he was one of the only American composers that they would allow in Russia to play his music in concerts. So I know they're really strict, but I think that's amazing that you were able to do that. That's
when they asked me, I sent three songs to them, which they were just going to play in the movies. But when they fired their composer, they asked me, I'd never done any movies before. And they asked me if I could do it. And I said, yeah, of course I can. and then I got friends of mine, and I just doused myself in, what's they call the Italian composer? They did all the spaghetti westerns.
Morricone.
Morricone. So basically, I'd never been into classical stuff ever. And the friend of mine came round, and I just doused myself in what he was doing. And I just thought it was amazing, so I started practicing, listening to all the string arrangements.
Now, did you do that all synthetically, or did they let you have a string section?
No, well, I shot myself in the foot because they were going to give me a string section. But I got the new, what do they call it now? The LA score. And, I was working really hard to get it to sound real, and they liked what I did, so I wasn't allowed to get. They didn't want to finance getting the orchestra in then.
Yeah, no.
But it works really well, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, each has their plus or minuses. Yeah. It's a lot of writing to write for an orchestra, but then it's like that they play it and done.
Yeah.
The other way, you got to play around with it to get it to work, but you get the same. You can get the same.
You get
result.
The same result. It's all about dynamics, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I still, and if I'm doing four cellos, I'll play four times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't like play chords with it, you know.
Now, your approach on the new album that Set Them Free, which is the name of the upcoming album. Mm. Did you do a lot of the guitar work? I mean, I know you have guests on there, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But I mean, did you play a lot of the tracks?
Yeah, I did all the guitars apart from the one that Slash did. But he did that one. And I've done all the guitars and keyboards.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that.
You can tell he's a busy producer. The phone is always ringing.
That's okay. Sounds like the phone boxes when I was in London.
I know. It's interesting because that's the most popular sound for an iPhone, the actual old phone sound. But yeah, the so you did the all the basic tracks and rhythm tracks of that.
Yeah.
Now, dealing with in the album, I know that you have Steve Lukather.
Mm.
I don't know if you've recorded yet. You mentioned
I'm not recording Steve yet. No.
You haven't done Steve yet, but with Slash, what was that like? Did you just basically let him go, or did you direct?
Yeah,
him?
No. Basically, what that was, I did the demo of So Lonely, and I did the guitars myself, and then he liked what I'd done, and then he copied the front of the track, and then he just did what he felt, and I picked it all to bits and put it together, you know.
Okay, and he came down to your studio and
he did it at his own studio.
You did it at
his. He did a solo. I mean, I'm not going to tell him how to play a guitar solo, so it was a case. that's where the solo comes in. So yeah. I just let him go, and then I edited some. I got picked his best bits and shifted him about a bit.
Any problems marrying the sound to what you were recording, or was it pretty straightforward?
No. I mean, I was doing it like it was a Slash record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So... And every time I did something, I'd send it over to Slash to make sure he approved it, like I'm doing with all the artists, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so it was very, very simple, very easy, really.
Pretty. So. Now, and from your experience as a producer, you've done some pretty interesting sessions. You've done a lot of different things.
Well, I've done lots. Well, I've worked for two of the biggest production companies, so it was a case of having to do, 1 minute you'd be doing country, then rock, then pop dance. And then we'd be doing an Andrea Bocelli album. So all of a sudden you had to be doing classical stuff. So I've spent a lot of my career doing many, many different styles.
Yeah, we had played when we were on earlier. I was on earlier with you guys with Ilona on Accent On. And she played a clip of you that you did with David Bowie. Mm. And you did all the guitars on it. And check out the show that we had done, because she plays it and it's beautiful. A lot. You were using a lot of. Was that first guitar?
That's the first guitar, yeah.
That thing sounded cool.
It does sound good.
That was a nice sound. The acoustic guitars were killed, but you did the electric too. The electric.
I did it all in my studio in. That's why I lived in London.
What did you use for the lead guitar? I gotta know. I'm sorry.
I think it was the Ibanez. Ibanez 335.
Marshall.
No, the Ibanez.
No, but I mean, did you go through a Marshall?
Oh, no, I just plugged it straight into the...
Now, you were telling me, we were talking before the show, you've been using a lot of the plugins now.
Well, I'll have a lot... Well, they're so good, some of them now. I mean, I've got amps at my studio, and I have tried and put them together, used them. But then when I've tried to compare them, it's easy just to plug the guitar into the box. And they're getting... And as long as you use them right, correctly... You get some great sound out of them.
Yeah, we were talking about the original advantage of miking is doing like distant miking and combined miking, but now the plugins you can program.
You can do all that, yeah.
You can program all that.
I mean, obviously, I think there's. I think sometimes when you're playing through an amp, you maybe play it differently. Because if you're. Usually when I'm sat in the studio, I'm listening through my JBL speaker monitors.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's different if you've got an amp behind you. I think if you're all recording together in a studio, I think you need that, you know, the amp and
as a when you're playing as an ensemble.
Yeah.
Well, there is a physical thing of moving air when you're playing an amp. There that I don't know. I've used like a lot of some of the plugins and actually I mean like we had Steve Hunter on here and he showed me some stuff on his new album, Midnight Blue, and he did a lot of stuff with plugins and I couldn't tell the difference. Mm. I mean, it just sounded amazing, but. One thing I know with an amp is when you punch it, if you're using a lot of dynamics and you're playing, instead of like a lot of guys now use a lot of gain, so it's kind of compressed and it's in the same pocket. But when you're playing a lot of dynamics, there's nothing like those tubes punch.
No, that's true. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that I've always found that with pedals, you know, with distortion pedals and stuff like that, it's hard to get. You lose that dynamic.
And I think it depends on the style of music you're doing as well.
That's true. Yeah. That is definitely true. Now, talking about equipment, most of the stuff that you do now, Andy, you record direct, right? Or do you use an amp in the studio?
Direct. Having come from stage where I would have about six stacks. I like to see people having bowel movements when I plug a string.
I've seen people, they were there. I forgot where it was, but somebody, I was at a gig and it was pretty loud. Mm. And they were next to the subwoofers of the PA. Mm. And somebody was trying to light up, and the air from the bass actually blew the match out.
Wow. Was it a cigarette or was it a funny cigarette?
It doesn't matter.
I'm just wondering, Jack.
No, this was in the 70s, so it probably was a funny one, but it was kind of funny because the person was like, huh? It's gone. And they would light another one and boom, they would just go.
Yeah,
they didn't realize they were standing in front of the. Yeah.
Or they already smoked too much.
That may have been true. But anyway, no. But when you do play live, what do you use?
I've used a lot of Marshall.
Oh, really?
But I've actually, although I didn't used to like Orange, they've got so good now, I really like that too. Mm-hmm. And luckily for me, the guy I sat next to in school, it was in the school band with me, he's one of the main guys at Orange Company. And my cousin, nephew, is one of the top guys at Marshall. So whenever I need one or the other, I get it.
So what Marshall do you use? Is there a Marshall bass amp?
There was. I mean, in Free, you're using Marshall, right?
Yeah.
You're using the 100 Waters?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a 100-watt bass amp. I forget the model number, but there was one.
I just wondered if you're using a guitar amp now.
No.
Oh, okay. No.
Okay. No. You're still using Marshall or Orange?
Yeah. But that's really live. I mean, in the studio, you want to go direct. You don't want to deal with buzzes and all of that stuff.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Plugins are so good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. But did you ever go to a rack system in like the 80s? Like everybody was getting like these and tri-amp and bi-amp and tri-amp. You never did that? Or
No, just plug that sucker in.
True basic bass. Basic.
The great thing about the plugins as well, you know, you can do a mix. And if you go back to it, if you want to change it, you can change the sound completely, you know. Mm. You know, so that's really useful.
Do you ever like record the guitar just straight and then reamp it using the plugins?
Yeah.
So you always have the direct that you had of the guitar, and then you can manipulate.
So you can manipulate it whenever you want.
Any way you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've been hearing more and more the plugins are just becoming amazing. Yeah. What they're able to do. Now with your acoustic guitars, let's get back to you on the acoustic guitars. How do you mic those?
Well, basically on that, what you heard is just one microphone at the base of the guitar.
Do you remember what kind of mic?
A C12.
Ah.
I use a C12 for everything.
Really? Oh, okay.
I mean, I've got all sorts of different microphones, and I always go back to those. It's just the best.
Okay. You never? Do you use ribbons?
No, the only one I've got, I think SoSonics is a good mic.
Because I know a lot of guitarists, even though they don't have the frequency response, they're flat, and they like, especially for acoustic guitars, they like that there's no peaks.
Yeah.
Whereas a cardioid or some of the electrets have they have a little bump in it. Mm. So
there's just something about the C12, I mean, that I really like.
That is a nice sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then again, you got the same thing. You got all the plugins. You can change everything so much nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No, that's cool. Yeah. No, I mean, the C12, those are nice. I mean, they're legendary. Now, Andy, besides bass, you on your album, you played some of the guitar parts too.
The ordinary sounding ones, you know, I would play sort of basic grooves or mm-hmm. the reggae thing. But like the real kind of juicy stuff, got people like Kat Tyson,
mm-hmm.
who is a Prince's guitarist. She's like the female Jimi Hendrix. I got this German guy called Christoph Lindler, who's like Jeff Beck. On the album I'm working on now, I actually got Toby, who is a London kid who I signed to the McTrax mm-hmm. label. And I like get up at 4, you know, spend 5 hours exercising. He gets up about 4 in the afternoon. And and they're like, oh, we're going to put some guitar on this, are we? Okay. So, while he's on his Facebook with his girlfriend, we get some good guitar and then go and grab a meal, and it seems to work.
Well, for you to say that, you know, that you're impressed with these guitar players means a lot, because you've played with some pretty legendary people. I know you had played bass for John Mayall, but you were gigging at that time with Mick Taylor, who played with the Stones. And I remember seeing Mick with the Stones here when they played out here, the Yaya's tour, and he was just incredible.
And great Mayall. Guitarist.
And you also played with Chris Spedding.
Yes, and in fact, little secret here, kiddies, the Every Breath You Take, which I sing on the Rat album, has Chris Spedding guesting.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And he does a beautiful job.
He's, I mean, as I know him from Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds, and if you guys ever listen to that album, some of the tones he's getting out of his guitar are just incredible. Killer. He gets a great sound all throughout that album. Yeah. And when you did, well, let's talk a little bit about Chris Spedding. Do you remember what the session?
Well, it was Andy recorded.
Oh, you did Chris, it over at your place.
Did it over at his place. So.
Do you remember what he was using? I'm just curious.
Oh, he was in England. He just sent it over.
Oh, he sent it over?
Yeah.
Because I know he uses his signature Flying V. He uses a Flying V a lot.
Well, I toured with him last year with Toby. And I don't remember any Flying Vs. I think he had a Strat and a Les Paul.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, I mean, when I was looking him up on Wikipedia, they said that was his trademark during the early years. He was using a Flying V Gibson.
Oh.
But he, I'm sure on War of the Worlds, he was using a Strat on some of that because it has that single coil sound. But he got that. He got this really chimey sound, which I'm still trying to figure out how he did it.
One of his greatest qualities is he listens to everyone else and puts in what is needed. You know, he's not one of those guys who run up to the front of the stage in their purple kind of tight pants and like, look at me playing guitar. He really listens and compliments.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really good tour. And the way he complimented Toby's guitar playing, which is pretty amazing. It was really very cool.
Now, you've been in several different bands even after Free. How important was that? That was must have been an important part for you to be able to listen to everybody and incorporate. I mean, to me, most great session players or great players in bands, that ability to really listen rather than just blow and go. And just take off and kind of like go their own way, right?
Well, for me, that has always been my role, is to, I'm a kind of a ranger. You know, this is your space. You could do anything in this space over here. And this is your space. Do anything you like.
Mm-hmm.
And my role is to do whatever is needed. And if, say, like, for example, All Right Now, there was no bass in the verse, because it wasn't needed, you know. So, I mean, I'll just play tambourine if that's what's going to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
That's my job. If you need something fancy, I'll do it. But if you just need me to go doom and wait 5 minutes, I can do that too and be just as satisfied.
Right, whatever it needs. But, I mean, you're listening to everybody else and then trying to figure out what will complement that.
Combine it, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure you too, Gary, as a producer, you have to. You're like the conductor.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, you just got to be. Sometimes you can get a bit lost in it, though. You end up putting things on that you don't need to sometimes. So you have to back off. I'll just send it to Andy first and let him have a listen to it. It says to me, take that off.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because you mentioned just before the fact that, which a lot of producers, a lot don't do that, but I think it's kind of cool that you're going back and forth with the artist to get their input and going, that kind of synergy is really kind of a cool thing.
And a lot of the time as well, you know, I'll ask my wife, and she knows nothing about music whatsoever, but she'll sit there and she'll go to me, I don't like that funny thing there, I don't like that funny sound, or... And sometimes, because people get so musical, I think when you're finishing a record, producing a record, it's got to appeal to the normal person, not just a musician.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So she's a good bouncing board, you know. And then I always send it to Andy as well, because he's always very honest and straight about it. Mm-hmm. Which I want, you know, if you ask somebody's opinion, you know, sometimes when you've been working on a track for sometimes weeks, you just get completely lost. You know?
Yeah, you need some
and you need somebody to say, just have a listen to this. And Andy, at least, you know, because you don't want people saying, oh, yeah, it sounds fantastic, Gary. I'd rather somebody say, it doesn't sound very good, this, you've got to do this and do that. You know,
mm-hmm.
If you ask somebody's opinion,
yeah,
I want it. You know, I'm not just fishing for compliments or anything.
Yeah. Now, you know? do you go to your family for, or do you send stuff to, I mean, where do you get your feedback?
Generally, I work on lots of songs at the same time. When I go deaf on one, I go on to the next and the next. When I come back to the first one, I think, Jesus, that's not bad at all. And it sort of inspires me to kind of do more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I try not to get like, okay, I'm not going to quit this song until I get it. I jump about a lot.
See, I'm more like that. Where I can't stop, I can't focus and think about anything else until I finish that track.
Right.
I mean, that's something that I should maybe try and do a few at the same time, but I find it very difficult to do that.
No, I get what you're saying.
If something's not right, and then I'll leave it till the next day, maybe.
Yeah, well, especially if you're writing, when you get the idea, you want to get it down as quick as possible because it's fresh. Yeah,
well, I think anything, and I think music should be spontaneous.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think most things that you do are usually off the cuff, really.
Right. So you tend to get it in the first few takes.
The longer I'm at something, the worse I get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It just seems to get worse and worse, including mixes.
Right.
If I have to keep going over it and over it, they just get worse and worse. Then I'll call Andy.
Same with you. Do you tend to be the first few takes? If it doesn't happen, then you go on.
I've surprised myself sometimes. I was like, there's a song on my current album on assignment,
mm-hmm.
called Beautiful. And originally it was just going to be like this string pad and this massive rap kick drum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought it was going to be like really... So just before I went to bed, I thought, I'll stick on some bass and listen in the morning. And... put it on in the morning, and I thought, fucking hell, that's it. And, you know, so you never know.
It's usually those... It's
7-second delay.
It's usually those, yeah, those little things that you, at that moment, you're probably not thinking too much about, but when you come back, it's like, yeah, it's brilliant.
When I'm doing guitar solo, it's the same thing. I'll sit and practice for a while, but mm-hmm. then just put it in record. And I work on Logic first. Record it to Logic, and put it onto Pro Tools. But you can get some amazing things when you've just done a load of stuff, then you compile it together again.
Yeah, you just start.
You just do stuff that you wouldn't normally play. So then go back and learn. If you've got something, then go back and learn it. You know,
I think that's great about the, you know, stuff like Logic in your own studio, because when you did sessions before in the old days where you were in a studio and the time was money, you were really restricted. Now you can just play what you know, if it doesn't work, hey, it's no big deal.
Yeah, oh, exactly, yeah.
No, that's true. Now, let me ask you now, both of you guys, influences. What were big influences you – we'll start with Andy. What was a big influence for you with bass?
Well, that's funny because, first of all, I've never thought of myself as a bass player. I always listen to singers and songs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the good bass players just made themselves known. I mean, I listened to Gladys Knight or Aretha Franklin or Otis Redding or Stevie Wonder before and after Music of My Mind, which I think that was like someone turned the key and like, oh, all this wonderful stuff came pouring out. And if it's a great song, it's and a great singer, and a lot of those Motown bass players and Carole King, and who was the guy on the Marvin Gaye's album?
Jim Jameson?
Yeah, right. I mean, wow. Yeah, I mean.
So it's interesting because you're mentioning pretty much a lot of most of the R&B stuff, which is interesting because you started as a with Mayall, you were doing blues, but your influence is R&B. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the guys, even the Stones, you know, they were all into the blues stuff. They were doing the blues. And even your friend that helped your career, Alexis Korner, he was a major blues. He pretty much established a lot of the blues in England. Yeah. I mean, he pretty much set the standard where a lot of the groups were influenced by him.
Well, I kind of think blues is like the foundation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then when you move away from those three chords and those two lines with the one at the end, you know, and you don't lose the blues feel. You just expand on the songwriting aspect. But that blues has to be underneath there.
I agree. And I feel, I mean, I've talked with a lot of different guitar players now that are playing, especially a lot of the metal players. And it's like the stuff to me that really works is the blues-based stuff.
Oh, definitely.
Because it has that emotion. Yeah. There is something about it that's, you know, I love the fast licks and the scales and the tapping and all that stuff. But there's just something about. But then you see guys like Steve Vai, where they're doing bends and they're doing stuff in the tapping, and they're actually doing kind of bluesy things within that context, which is kind of cool. So now that's interesting. I just think it's fascinating that your R&B is a big influence too. That's significant to me in your writing, from what I've heard, because I can hear it. And then what about you, Gary? What were your big influences?
Well, man was the blues, the same thing. Andy's band was Free, was one of my influences when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I used to listen to all the time, you know. And but Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's one of my favourite. I think he's one of the best blues guitarists. Just his tone and his feel was just amazing, I thought.
Yeah.
Clapton as well, in the early days. Clapton in the John Mayall days. But when he's changed from his Les Paul to the Strat, I didn't like it so much, you know, but I loved the tone of Peter Green when he used to use his Les Paul gold tone.
Well, even Mick Taylor, when I heard Mick Taylor play with the Stones, he sounded a lot, he had that same type of feel that Clapton had from Cream and before Cream, that blues sound. He was using a Les Paul, but it had that same, the riffs were similar, so I'm sure all of that came from Mayall.
I actually thought Mick Taylor was maybe one of the only guys who could have replaced Kossoff.
Mm.
Yeah, and Kossoff was his great.
Yeah.
The thing is about what you can't, some of the metal stuff that you hear now, in that day in the 70s, you knew when Jeff Beck played, when Eric Clapton played, when Peter Green played, you could tell straight away, but nowadays, it could be, everybody plays the same to me. That's the blue star was definitely, and Larry Carlton was another one that I loved because he could play the jazz stuff, but he's very bluesy as well as Larry Carlton.
Yeah, no, there was a whole there was definitely what the English brought to the blues. Their interpretation just changed the whole, and it is definitely the foundation. I mean, of all of the rock stuff that's come out, and I think even the Beatles, they were influenced by it.
Sure.
Maybe not as directly as the Stones, but it was definitely a blues influence. Even you can hear it a little bit in Harrison's playing.
Well,
very soulful. A lot of the really cool soulful things that he was doing. Well, you know what I mean?
You know, it's what you play. I mean, yeah, you can sit there and play as flashy as you like, but it's what you play that's the important thing. Like, you know, it's like songs are important.
Mm-hmm.
So what you play is really important too. You know?
Yeah, no, that's true.
People play too fast for me these days and too fancy. And you can't, it's very difficult to distinguish the styles, I think.
Well, that's true. And also, too, the plugins. They're using the same stuff, and it you
all the same sounds, you know. But the minute you heard Paul Kossoff play,
he was his own thing.
He just played one note, and you know it was him. You know?
Yeah, no, that's for sure.
So, Gary, I had a question for you. I was wondering what inspired you to actually create this this album and this charity? Like, what made you choose this particular
subject? Well, basically, just a friend of mine came around and they just showed me a little pamphlet with all these children that was getting, and I didn't believe it. It was like 30 million children was being abused and just ridiculous things, statistics. So I just looked at that and I just thought, well, I'd like to do something for, you know, because it was horrific, really.
It is.
And yes. I mean, it is horrific. And it's got, since I first started wanting to do this, it's got worse. I mean, it gets worse by the day, you know. So, somebody basically showed me the statistics with IgM, and I just thought, well, what can I do? And I looked at Sting stuff. I was a big fan of The Police, and thought some of his lyrics was very relevant. And he's got plenty, and I think most musicians have got a favourite Police or Sting song. So I thought it'd be easy to get people on board, you know.
Mm-hmm. How did Sting react? He was totally cool with it.
Well, I informed the management company when we was doing it, but Sting's not involved in this. I mean, obviously he's sang them before, so there's no point in him singing them again. Mm-hmm. Hopefully down the line when we grow it even more, it may want to get involved in some way. But, you know, these are... It's important for it to be their own, and their sound in their own right, you know.
There's very few songwriters who are as prolific as Sting. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could name maybe Paul Simon, you know. I mean, Dolly Parton ain't bad. but, you know, that are worth paying this kind of tribute to. And... I think the guy is a genius. I love him. When I was confronted with the facts, the stats, it was like once I knew, I couldn't unknow it. You can't pretend it's not there. It's like it's all going to go away. You have to do something about it.
Oh yeah, no, that's for it's sure. No, I've worked at Panasonic, and we did Blu-ray mastering. I worked in Blu-ray mastering, and one of the projects I did was a movie called Whistleblower with Rachel Weisz in the movie, but it's based on a true story about trafficking in Bosnia. And there were people involved at that time in not the UN, I think it was NATO or something. There was inside people involved in the whole payola, and that's about her busting the whole thing. But it was based on the true story, and we did the bonus material. I talked about the real story, and it was pretty close, and it was pretty shocking what was going on with these teenage girls, where they drug them and they killed them.
She killed them, torture them, everything. You
know? Yeah, the girl in the movie, Rachel plays, was an ex-cop that volunteered to go over there and saw what was going on and tried to get take this girl and take her away from it. And she was so scared, and they killed her. And it's just, I mean, she was like a teenager. She was like 16, 15. I mean,
she gets younger than that. I mean, I've heard things of 2-year-old children being murdered and used for torture to get so guys could get off on, you know. Some horrific stories. It's unbelievable. And the thing is, it's been out there for years, but we never get to hear about it. You know, something will happen, and it'll be on the news for 2 days. The great thing about music, I mean, all these stars on this, you know, they're not political. You know, they don't really care. I mean, Slash will say whatever he feels. Andy will say whatever he feels.
Yeah.
So we don't have to get cut through with all this crap, you know. And that's why I think it's you know, people are coming on board with this. You know?
Our job, I think, is to raise awareness and funds for international justice mission and create an environment where the general public is made aware of it. I mean, they are as unaware as I was. But once they become aware of it, it's gonna build and build till they demand something be done about it.
Right.
And this is like an ongoing commitment. You know, Gary's talking about the next album could be Paul Simon, or it could be opera, or country, or it's an ongoing commitment. And we're just going to keep hitting you until something is done about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's great to do. If you can do music, then it's great to work with the people that you want to work with, and for a great cause as well, you know.
Well, music is always kind of a universal thing.
It is totally universal.
Yeah, and also, too, there's even in the history of rock music, music was out there to bust people. I mean, we had a lot of protest stuff in the 60s and the 50s, and this is kind of the new protest in a sense, because you're enlightening people of what's going on. And and there is, I presume there is recourse, because, you know, we in the United States, it's pretty easy to legislate and get in there and stop things, even though this kind of stuff does happen here too. But like in the Middle East or in the Orient, is there avenues to go to stop this? I mean, can you use the legal procedure?
Well, that's what RJM are. They're run by a bunch of New York lawyers, and they're going changing the laws so that if somebody does get caught doing this, you know, they can go away for 20 years rather than just get a slap on the wrist. But in America, it's really bad. It's a bad problem. People think that, oh, it's like Cambodia or all of that, but it's not. It's on your doorstep. No. In San Diego, if you Google it, you'll see the thing called the rape trees. And it's like nobody's even heard of them. I mean, I'm English from England, but every time I talk to most Americans, they've never even heard of it. And it's where they'll rape the young girls and put their underwear on trees as trophies. And that's if you Google, if anybody Googles that now, you'll see it right in front of you. And it goes on in Arizona, which is bad. It's unbelievable. Palisades.
I mean, I've heard of stuff where, like, you'd get casting calls for modeling in Asia and the Middle East and, like, big money, and girls would disappear. I've heard stuff like that, but I haven't heard anything that blatant.
No, that's what I mean. Even downtown,
it's really that blatant.
Now people have been downtown L.A., watching for people getting off the buses, abducting them. It's happening all the time. There's a story from Palisades, you know, same thing. It's not as far away as people think it is, you know, and it's getting worse. It's like an epidemic. It's the second biggest illegal trade below drugs. $43 billion.
Wow.
$43 billion a year, you know.
Wow.
That's what it's generating. So it's a real problem, you know.
Well, that's way more serious than even I was aware. I mean, I was doing research for the show, and I was looking at what you guys, but I never knew it was that extensive.
It's ridiculous. I mean, in England,
it's horrendous.
They've just they got a ship. I think they pulled the ship up, and there was 36 children in it, or 36 that were trafficking. That's in North. I think that was in Norway. Mm. I think.
Wow.
But it's getting worse every day, and it's not just a Cambodia problem or Philippines. Yeah. It's just it's a big problem here.
I can't believe they can get away that they're able to get away with that here.
Well, I don't know why they're leaving all these so-called trophies on the border. Because if I was in charge, the first thing I would do is say, get rid of all that lot. You must check it out. You won't believe it. You know. So it's a real major. I mean, the album, to me, it's great doing this record, and I'm loving doing every minute of it. But it's gone, the album, that small now compared to the problem, because I keep hearing people are coming to us, and I'm hearing more about what the real problem is.
Yeah, well, you're hearing a lot more.
I've had people,
but it's coming in the open, and I think that's good. I mean, it's a start. I mean, and this is going to be, I think, this album from. I mean, I'll just mention real quick right now. Besides Slash, you have Joss Stone, Neil Sean, and Arnel Pineda from Journey, and Anne and Nancy Wilson from Heart, Sam Aliano, and Vogue, Andy, Glenn of Hughes. Course, Glenn, and you're going to be doing some tracks with Steve Lukather, Carlos Santana.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to get a lot of visibility, but it's important. But your plan is to do several albums, right?
Well, so at the moment, there's six albums that I'd like to do. One's the rock one. Mm-hmm. One's the rap against trafficking, you can have. Mm-hmm. I'd like to do a world album, because I've had success with productions and songwriting with French, Greek, Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to go to all the countries, and Russia as well, obviously, and get their biggest star and do a record with them. The Night of the Opera album by Queen, which was opera turning to rock, I'd like to turn it the other way and do that album with people like Andre Bocelli. You know? Then there's the Spanish market. You know, there's lots. It's a really good springboard for music. I'd like to do one with original artists, original songs, you know.
Do you have any plans to tour or do any concerts with some of these artists?
We've just secured the date in the 11th of July, which is the anniversary. It's not the 12th of July is the anniversary, but we've got the closest date to it, of Live Aid. And we're doing that in Manchester in the UK, to in the big arena there, which is all 20,000 people.
Wow.
So that's the one, and we've just secured that last week, that the arena. Mm-hmm. And then round the Grammys, we want to release the album around the Grammy period, mm-hmm. and have like a big Rock Against Trafficking party, hopefully getting performers to perform. And we're also working on trying to get, it'd be great to do a finale at the Grammys where you could have everybody on, Glenn, you know, Glenn and Slash and Fergie, mm-hmm. and then, you know, just doing maybe a medley of what we're doing at the moment.
We're also, along with the concert, we intend to simulcast it globally to movie theatres, as well as a live stream on the internet.
Right.
And so, I mean, just in your face, because at some point, you know, along with some of our sponsors, and I mean, we've got some great honourable committee members, like...
Oh, yeah, well, because obviously I live in Malibu, and we've got like David Arquette on board. Mm-hmm. I've approached Julie Roberts, who was my neighbour, Pierce Brosnan. So we're getting some people like that and trying to get an honorary board together as well. Cindy Crawford.
Oh, wow, you know, you're getting some pretty heavy duty.
Well, thankfully, they're most of them are my neighbours, and Sean Penn as well. We all live in the same street.
So I think there's probably going to come a point where we're going to have to get political, where the strength of the artists will push the public to push the politicians to do the right thing.
Right.
Well, we've already got, actually, Michael Regan. We met up with Ronald Regan's son.
Yeah.
And he's really, you know, he's really behind this. And we've just partnered up with the Kennedy Center, Kennedy Foundation.
Oh, wow.
So they're on board as well. So, you know, we're just starting to get, you know, get all the sponsors coming in and the partners coming in.
Well, no, I think that what you're talking about will definitely move towards lobbying here. I think that it's great that you're trying to do stuff in other countries featuring their artists, because that's the only way you're going to move them.
Well, exactly, yeah.
You know, it's difficult for, especially, well, you're from England, but even like an American, to try to get legislation in Russia. It's like,
oh, no, forget it.
Yeah.
Well, I work with Igor Nikolai.
Right.
Who is one of the biggest Russian singers there, but he can do a lot of things. He's got a lot of power.
Yeah. So I think that's important. The fact that you're making it a global thing is really cool.
An Indian thing as well. Like in Bollywood, I've had people from Bollywood too.
Right.
That's where the main problem is in India.
Yeah. No, that's really strong.
It's like everywhere in the world, every city you can think of.
Yeah.
Then there will be a DVD of the concert, plus extras, backstage interviews, and like a whole package.
Yeah.
And just keep pushing.
I got to throw out Blu-ray. You got to do Blu-ray. My friends at Panasonic, we have to do Blu-ray.
Merchandising, you know, there's going to be all sorts of things, you know.
Yeah, no, we were talking, this is unofficial, maybe we can prematurely announce this, but we were talking about possibly mixing the album later in 5.1, which I'm a big surround fan.
Yeah,
so I think that would be awesome too.
And vinyl as well is important, I think.
Yeah.
Somebody told me that vinyl is up in sales like it was in 2002.
It's coming up.
It's definitely starting
to take an upturn, even as CDs are going down a little more because of downloads, but it's actually getting an upswing.
Yeah.
So, but if you do it in vinyl, yeah, and then there is a market for the high def. So,
well, CDs are
24-bit, 96K, please. Thank you.
Well, CDs are a nuisance. The covers break. You can't open them. You know,
right?
You can't read what's on them. You can't see what's on the CDs. You know.
No, that's true.
So, you know, it wouldn't worry me if you never ever saw a CD again. Really. I'd rather have vinyl come back.
Yeah. Well. We're already out of time. I can't. It just goes by so fast. I'd love to have you guys come back on when it's closer to the release date, because I want to go through it and we can talk more about the songs that you guys are doing.
Great.
I think what you're doing is amazing, and you know, just let us know. Keep us posted. We'll post on our site. what's going on and keep everybody up to date on what's happening. I just want to mention Gary's website is www.gmillerproductionsingular.com. Andy's website is www.andyfraser.com. And then Rock Against Trafficking is www.rockagainsttrafficking2ts.org. Is there, and also too, I just want to mention real quick, your latest album, Andy, is On Assignment, and yeah. You also have another album, Naked, and Finally Free.
which you can find on McTracks.com.
NickTracks.com, that's yeah. Right. So in all formats. And then is this Set Them Free? Do we know what? Is it going to be distributed by another label, or are you going to do your own?
No, we haven't decided yet. I mean, the thing is, we've been doing as much as we can
okay.
at this stage. Because that's, you know, we can't, obviously we've got to Universal, we've got connections at Universal, and which is the biggest, obviously, at the moment.
They've shown interest.
They've shown interest. In
they've put us in touch with the global simulcast people mm-hmm. to hook it up to satellite. They actually suggested the DVD. So things seem to be going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. No, I think what you guys are doing is amazing. It's really admirable, I think. And it's shocking. I wasn't even aware of some of the stuff you're talking about.
Even you can go to Facebook, Rock Against Trafficking.
Yes, that's right.
And that'll keep you up to date, too. Mm.
Yes. I'll share the link over there. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being on, and we're definitely going to have you guys back again. And Andy, we need to have you on just to talk about your bass playing and your career. It's still it's fantastic. Everybody, we will see you next week.
Yep, thanks a lot, Sweetwater, for sponsoring the show.
Yes, and everybody have a great week, and thank you, guys.
Been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure.